Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 17th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week we get a recap of the Great American Beer Festival from three fellow podcasters who are home brewers themselves and attended GABF for the first time this year. Jeff Bearer from Craft Beer Radio, Rick Sellers from Pacific Brew News Radio, and Rick Hagerbaumer from Big Foamy Head. If you're new to home brewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Lots of fun stuff in the mailbag today. I promised last week that I'd try to get more mailbag stuff in, and I think I have. Increase the mailbag quotient in this episode. This one is fresh from the inbox, by the way. Gregory writes in from Honolulu after seeing our most recent video podcast about my 15-minute Amarillo ale. Gregory says, to reduce the time necessary for brewing, I tried crockpot beer. This was truly a 20-minute brew. Into 1.5 gallons of water in the crockpot, I added 1 cup cracked crystal 40 in a grain bag, set the pot on high. Returned in 60 minutes, removing the grain and adding a teaspoon of bittering hops. Left it for 2 hours, added 2 cups of light dry malt extract, and stirred until dissolved. I left that for 1 hour, added a teaspoon of flavor hops, shut off the power, and left covered until cool. Gregory says he strained that into a 1 gallon jar, added 1 teaspoon aroma hops, added 1 teaspoon bread yeast. I did not want to open a package of real yeast for the experiment. Fit the airlock and let it sit for a week. Gregory says he transferred it into 2 growlers. I have the kind with the Grolsch top, adding 2 tablespoons of honey to each. I closed and let it rest for a week, refrigerated, and enjoyed. Total people time on the project is about 30 minutes. People time. Gregory says, my first experiment came out all right, and I'm going to repeat it soon. So that's kind of wacky, wild. I asked Gregory if he came up with that himself, and I haven't heard back from him yet. Like I say, this is fresh out of the mailbox. Then Gregory adds a note for Steve on making bread. Gregory says, being frugal like any good Scot, I could not just pitch the steeping grains. I keep them in the fridge for a couple weeks. Each time I make bread, I add 3/4 cup or so of the spent grain. Great flavor and really nice texture addition to basic bread machine bread. Gregory says, add less water and less flour to offset the grain addition. That's fun stuff. I love hearing about radical ways of brewing and using beer ingredients in other foods. So I may have to try that crock pot brew. It sounds like fun, especially if it works. Ben writes in with a less than ideal experience with bread yeast, however. I'm going to paraphrase here. Ben did a side-by-side experiment with dry beer yeast, bread yeast, and a dietary supplement beer yeast. And here's what Ben says. When I did a side-by-side taste test, the regular and dietary supplement brewer's yeast were relatively pretty good beers. The bread yeast beer was a different story. It hit with a somewhat offensive odor. The flavor was almost tolerable as you first took a sip, but a nasty flavor lurked and seemed to grow at the back of the mouth after it was swallowed. Ben says, this was quite some time ago that I tried these samples, and as I reflect now, it may very well have been that I tasted the samples from the clear bottles I'd put some of the bottling in. Got to have a good sense of color/clarity differences when doing a yeast experiment, right? Ben says. As I also just finished watching your skunked beer video cast, the bread yeast sample might have been skunked, but the odor and flavor wasn't really of skunk, but it was more of a very aggressive bread flavor/aroma. I also recall that the bread yeast I used wasn't fresh, but had been sitting in my freezer for possibly quite a while. So it sounds like there are a handful of variables in Ben's experiment, including putting the yeast in the freezer. Steve and I, when we did our bread/beer experiment, we used fresh bread yeast in our experiment with our beer, and we had good results. So, but I do appreciate hearing about Ben's bad experiences, though. That's good food for thought, and it is a reason to experiment more with small batches in bread yeast just for the fun of it, just to see what happens. By the way, Ben offered to send a sample of his a bad-tasting beer for me to try, and I had to give him the same answer that I give anyone who offers to send me bad beer, and that is, no thanks. just for future reference, if you've got a nasty beer, I don't want it. I'll take your word for it. It's kind of like the old scenario of somebody opening the fridge and pulling something out and saying, "Ooh, this tastes nasty. Here, try." Oh, no, I'll take that as a given that it's nasty. Stephen from Auburn, Alabama writes, and I'll read his note despite the results of a recent football game. Stephen says, just finished listening to Offbeat Yeast Episode 1, and I heard something that I think is incorrect. Someone said bread yeast can only stand about 5% alcohol. I've personally used bread yeast quite a bit for various fermentations and found that it can go beyond 5% ABV. In fact, I have a quote-unquote Walmart cider that I made using ingredients only from that store, apple juice, bread yeast, and table sugar. The original gravity was 1072, and it fermented down to 1008, making the alcohol by volume around 8.4%. I didn't want it that dry, so I ended up adding more sugar in the keg to increase the sweetness. It was rough at first, but after 3 weeks in the fridge, it was very tasty. So there you go. And just a reminder to any underage listeners out there, just because you can buy ingredients for fermenting at Walmart legally, don't wait till you're 21 to start fermenting stuff and drinking it yourself. That's the legal disclaimer here. Got a few emails about labeling for bottles. Joaquim from Oslo writes with this. He says there are printable labels out there that are removable. When you've emptied the bottle, you just peel off the label. No glue residue, no hassle, and they don't come off when they're not supposed to either. Well, unless you put the bottles in water for some reason, he says. I got mine at worldlabel.com. They come in a variety of shapes, sizes, and colors, though not all of them come with the removable option. Joaquim says he uses the 2.875-inch circular ones. They seem oval, he says, when applied to a round bottle, very nice and professional-looking. There you go. Brett from Tulsa, Oklahoma writes, Avery, not the brewery, makes a 6464 removable laser label that is 4 inches by 3 and a third inches. The labels are 6 to a sheet on an 8.5 by 11 page, perfect for a 6-pack IPA, and the dimensions fit standard beer bottles perfectly. These labels stick very well, even during refrigeration, and much to my amazement, peel off very simply, leaving no residue. Best of all, Microsoft Word and Publisher include templates for the 6464 label size, making creation of a spiffy label a cinch. My experience with beer labels, I used typing paper, and I cut them to size myself, and then I used spray adhesive. And I made the mistake of holding the labels in my hand as I was spraying them. And don't do that. It doesn't want to come off skin. And they don't want to come off the bottles afterwards. So anyway, Craig from Albany, New York says, or is it Albany? Probably Albany. New York says, I have one thing that I can share that was spurred on by a sanitation episode that you did. It deals with getting labels off recycled bottles. I bottle all my beer in the 22-ounce bottles, since I only have to fill about 29 versus 48. Craig says, well, sometimes the labels are a bit hard to remove, so I load up my oven with the bottles and turn the oven to warm. When the oven reaches the preheat temperature, I turn off the oven, and the labels come off like butter. So be careful. Be careful using heat and glass, everybody. That's another legal disclaimer there. Marty from Medway, Massachusetts, writes about asking about Chris Colby's Mountain Dew brew, Beelzebos, I think he called it. Marty says, for some reason, I think I might want to try that, but won't the preservatives in the soda pop stop the yeast from fermenting? And Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, responds, soda pop has enough preservatives in it to protect against the amount of contaminants that it might reasonably expect to encounter. It does not have enough preservatives to guard against the number of yeast cells in a yeast starter. I've made two Mountain Dew beers in which roughly half the liquid was Mountain Dew and they fermented fine. My latest Dew brew, Beelzebos, is about three-quarters Mountain Dew and it fermented a bit more sluggishly. Whether that was due to the preservatives or the pH or what, I don't know. In any case, the fermentation ran a few extra days and I gave it a few more beyond before racking the beer. No biggie. Just be patient while it ferments. Also, don't forget the yeast nutrients. So, appreciate Chris taking time to answer that question. Beelzebos. Okay, now on to our conversation with Jeff Bear, Rick Sellers, and Rick Hagerbaumer. The lucky guys attended their first GABF this year. For various reasons this year, I decided to sit out the Great American Beer Festival. And one of the reasons was that after attending the past 2 years in a row, it was starting to feel routine and, you know, kind of more like work than, it was feeling like something I had to do. And I don't want that. It's such a special event that I wanted to, you know, keep it something to look forward to. So I sat out this year. And but for this episode, I wanted to get impressions of the GABF from those who were seeing it for the first time. All right, Jeff Bearer and Rick Sellers and Rick Hagerbaumer, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, you guys, have invited you guys on because you are all three homebrewers, and you're all three beer journalists, and you're all three, this was your all three, your first time to the Great American Beer Festival. So I kind of wanted to get the perspective of you guys from those perspectives, so to speak. So let's start with you, Jeff, since you're warmed up. You've already done a show this evening, we must say. So since you're already warmed up on the mic, let's start with you. Going into the Great American Beer Festival, what did you find that you was like that you did expect, and what were some surprises?
Well, let's see. What did I expect? I expected a beer fest with a lot of breweries and a lot of beers, but I could not comprehend the 430 breweries or something like that, and the 1,800 beers. So I wasn't sure how I was going to really attack the beer festival, you know, tasting wise. As it works out, it was quite a daunting experience. But I kind of worked out, you know, let's try breweries that I can't get at home. Try to get some of the more known ones. For example, I hear Rick from Pacific Brew News talk about Rubicon as his local brewery, so I made sure I check them out. Walking Man from up in Oregon, I heard lots of good things about them, so I checked them out. One of the things that I didn't expect about the Beer Fest and was amazing was how accessible the brewers were. Walking around the brewery floor, hanging out at Falling Rock after the session, you know, you go to Brooklyn Brewery to get a beer, and there's Garrett Oliver right there pouring the beer, and you can talk to him. And I thought that was amazing that you can find some of these guys that we've put up on such high pedestals as rock stars of the brewing world, just hanging out, happy to talk to you, and just being a normal guy.
Rick Sellers, you are no stranger to beer festivals. How did this one compare, and were you surprised?
Well, I expected it to be more chaotic, to be honest. It's not the biggest beer fest as far as the population goes. It is the biggest beer fest as far as beer goes. And I expected, because it was indoors, that we would be constantly bumping into people. And to be honest, I kind of expected it to just be unpleasant at times. And I was really pleasantly surprised that it was so spacious and the people were so well behaved, and it was, you know, it was just a great time. People had a great time just drinking the beer and talking with friends, and there was very little in the way of conflict or, you know, just all out drunken behavior. And That was a pleasant surprise. The number of sour beers that are made in this country really shocked me. I did not expect that, and it was a wonderful surprise. And as a whole, it lived up to everything you've ever read, and in some parts it exceeded that, and I'll be happy to go back next year.
Did you attend all the sessions?
I did not attend the Saturday night session, but I did attend Thursday, Friday, and the members-only session.
Yeah, your comment about the low number of drunkenness or the low amount of drunkenness made me wonder if you did attend the Friday and the Saturday night session.
Actually, your comment is why I did not attend the Saturday night session.
Well, actually, James, I did attend the Saturday night session, and we can talk about it a little bit after you get Rick's opinions on the initial question.
Okay. Rick Hagerbomber, your turn.
It lived up to my expectations. I sort of expected the amount of beer, and I was kind of worried about sobriety being a problem, you know, and that, you know, you just constantly taste. But I think that the 1 ounce tasting glasses and just the wide variety kind of kept you from overindulging, because I was looking for specific things. I was always looking for a special release beer or a high gravity beer. One of my disappointments was you'd go to the booth and you'd say, do you have any special beers or high gravity beers? And the pourers would look at you and say, what's high gravity?
Mm.
You know. So the first couple of sessions, the brewers weren't in attendance. They were off doing their brewer stuff. And it was mostly just volunteers out on the floor who didn't really know what they were pouring. I found that the Saturday day session, which was open to the Homebrewers Association, that had a lot more brewer representation behind the booth. So you could actually ask them questions and, you know, find out special things about their beer. I have to echo what Jeff was saying, in that it was just amazing to see all these brewers walking around like normal people. You know, I kind of get stars in my eyes when I see them, because they're home brewers who've gone big. You know, they're making a living out of what we all love to do, and I think that's extremely cool.
Yeah, I agree. One of the people that I was immediately drawn to, obviously, was Charlie Papazian. You know, you see Charlie standing there in the Brewers Association booth, and every now and then we'd walk by and say, that's Charlie Papazian right there. He's right there. And then, you know, hey, that's Charlie Papazian. He's eating a brat. Look, there's Charlie eating a brat, you know. And
yeah, these are real people.
Yeah, exactly. And by the end of it, you know, we walked up and introduced ourselves and, you know, thanked him for helping us to get into homebrewing. And, you know, he was just obviously a normal guy. But, you know, the kind of power of celebrity, and it's nice to have that stripped away when you meet these people in person.
Right. James, it's nice to walk by John Palmer and just shake his hand and say, hi, John, I like what you do, and keep doing it, you know?
Yeah, John is probably the most approachable guy. So if anybody listening ever sees John Palmer at an event, don't be afraid to go up and talk to him, because he's just the nicest guy in the world. But, Jeff, you were saying you're going to say something about Saturday night session.
Oh, well, actually, since we were just talking about Charlie, the one thing I wanted to add was I was at the staff and brewers tasting Friday after the session. This is the tasting the party where they have all the leftover judging beers for people to try. And the thing about Charlie that hit me was, you know, after I left, I was walking out, and in the lounge, Charlie's sitting there watching the Colorado Rockies in the playoffs. Just sitting there with a couple other guys, and that's when it hit me, like, hey, Charlie's a normal guy too. But the Saturday night session was interesting, because there's good and bad and good and bad. The first bad was there was people there just to get drunk, which fed directly into a good. It was the only time all weekend I was at where there was not a line in front of breweries like New Glarus, Russian River, and the Lost Abbey.
Wow.
So you could walk right up and get beers from those breweries, you know, without having to wait 15 minutes or 7 or 8 or whatever the wait was at these booths. Then the next following bad is a lot of these, you know, a lot of breweries were out of the beers by Saturday night, so you couldn't get all the best beers.
There was no line at Allagash, because there was no beer at Allagash.
Hmm.
Right. But, you know, Saturday night, I was there probably 45 minutes into the session. There was probably six people in front of Russian River. A couple of girls ordered the supplication because like, ooh, a cherry beer, and they basically spit it out because they weren't expecting sour. Meanwhile, I'm there like, wow, man, I can get Blind Pig and Beatification and Supplication and not have to stand in line each time. This is great.
Yeah, the one thing that I noticed on Friday and Saturday nights was the long line in front of the Miller Genuine Draft booth. And, you know, not wanting to slight Miller Genuine Draft, but you can get Miller Genuine Draft anywhere. And I wanted to take these people and say, look, over there, there's beer from Alaska.
I was shocked by the line at the Coors Light booth on every session as I walked by. Because the Coors Light booth was at the end of the Pacific region. And, you know, California beers and the beers that I just think are world class just steps away from the Coors Light booth. But, of course, Coors Light had flat screen TVs and video games. So
I was mostly shocked by the Iron City Brewing, formerly Pittsburgh Brewing. You know, they make Iron City Lager, which is a pretty bad beer here in Pittsburgh. But they must carry some kitsch nationwide about some steel workers, you know, work time beer, because there was always a small crowd in front of Iron City. I just couldn't believe, coming from Pittsburgh myself.
No, they had very popular swag.
Now, being home brewers, one of the things that I really got out of the Great American Beer Festival was trying all these different styles of beer that, you know, I live in Northwest Arkansas, so we're getting better, but it's still, we still are fairly living in a beer desert. I was able to taste a lot of these styles that I just read or heard about, and sour beers, my first GABF, was the thing that really sparked my interest and got me really going toward the Belgian direction and the sour direction. Did you guys find anything that lit a light bulb over your head as far as from a homebrew perspective of thinking, I'm going to brew this when I get back home? Rick Hagerbomber, let's start with you this time.
There were a couple of them that I found very interesting. Maui Brewing Company, they had a coconut porter that was just a very unique taste. I'd never had coconut in beer before, and it was a wonderful blend. 21st Amendment, they had a beer called Watermelon Funk that I found pretty interesting. It was amazing that they could keep that watermelon taste, and they still had a little bit of the sour in it.
Rick Sellers.
Just in talking with a lot of the brewers, a lot of the really unique beers that I tried, and again, I seem to be on a mission to find every sour beer that I could get my hands on. The idea of a sour mash, in talking with a couple brewers, I've never thought about doing it, but after talking with just a couple of brewers, most notably from Cambridge Brewing, the idea of a sour mash is really something I want to look into, and I can see myself doing maybe sometime this winter, and also playing with an oak barrel. That seems like the next step in my brewing evolution.
Did you get any tips on the sour mash from the brewers?
I did at this time. I don't remember. It's in some of my notes. Just the really not worrying about it. You know, the letting something go overnight, and trusting that it's going to work out. So, I was warned that, you know, it might look wrong or smell wrong, but it's probably right.
Jeff Bear, what about you from a homebrewer's perspective?
I have a couple things from the homebrewer's perspective. First, let me follow up with Rick from Big Foamy Head about the Maui Brewing Company. I made sure I checked out their booth because we recently interviewed Julia Herz from the Brewers Association, and we asked her, what American brewer is doing something exciting and new that, you know, you think is notable? And she mentioned Maui Brewing. So I went out and tried their coconut porter, and we actually interviewed the brewer, which you'll be able to find on the Craft Beer Radio website. Like that plug?
Yeah, nice plug.
But what was the site again?
Craftbeerradio.com, of course.
Do you guys have a podcast?
The kind of porter I thought was amazing, and as the brewer states it is, he brewed a robust porter and only used the coconut to accent the beer. And I don't think I've ever had a beer spiced with any kind of fruit that has been such a nice accent and so subtle to complement the beer. They also make an American wheat that is spiced with pineapple, Maui Gold pineapple, which apparently for us mainlanders, we don't appreciate the nuances in pineapple. But this beer, when you're drinking it, it tastes like an American wheat. But then after you're done, about 20 seconds later, your mouth just fills with this pineapple flavor. And it was, again, it was not overpowering. It was subtle. It was very well done. So, yeah, Maui is a brewery that everyone should check out if they have the opportunity to.
And it helps that they can walk out their back door probably and pick the ingredients fresh. I'm not sure that we know what a fresh pineapple or a fresh coconut tastes like.
Well, that's part of their scheme is to brew with these local ingredients. I talked with a brewery in Mississippi, Lazy Magnolia Brewing Company. It's the first production brewery in Mississippi. It's kind of close to where you are, James. They want to go with local flair for their beers. So they have a pecan brown ale. Unfortunately, to be honest, when I tasted it, it's a pretty subtle beer. So in the Great American Beer Fest atmosphere, it wasn't a beer I could truly appreciate. So I really would like to try that again on its own merits.
Yeah, we say pecan. So
yes.
Now, do you guys, going back to the Maui Brewing, are they the company that's canning their beers?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I tried one of their beers at Falling Rock on Thursday night, and it wasn't the coconut porter, but it was a very well made beer.
Yeah, the first time that we toured Oscar Blues in Lyons, Garrett was there. Garrett Morero was there checking out the canning line. So this was before they got their canning line. So I thought that was kind of cool that we saw that kind of happening firsthand. And again, Garrett's a super nice guy. Dale Katechis at Oscar Blues, was a super nice guy. And it's not everybody that you can just walk up to and stick a camera in their face and say, hey, can you give us a tour? And he was like, yeah, no problem. Strapped on the microphone and off he went. One of the good things about the Great American Beer Festival is that it's located in that part of the country. What other breweries or what other side excursions did you guys make? Let's start with Rick Sellers this time.
Oh boy, it challenged my memory.
Come on,
Wednesday,
Rick, go straight to the big one. Go straight to Avery.
Oh, we'll get there. on Wednesday, we'd actually scheduled a private tour at New Belgium. And we got to try some of these sour beers from their wooden vats, which I honestly had never seen one before. They're the, 25-foot-tall wooden barrels that they brought in from Belgium. Just gorgeous. And we got to try the La Tura, or Tua, and La Folie from these barrels. And just a great tour, great company.
Yeah.
From there, we went down the street to probably the biggest, my most surprising in a good way visit, which was Coopersmith's in Fort Collins. They had a lambic, a creek actually, a spontaneously fermented beer aged on cherries, and it was wonderful. So nice. It wasn't over-the-top sour and had a beautiful pink hue to the color. Just so easy to drink. And the tour there was really nice. Dwight is the head brewer. He took us around, showed us the barrels, and they've been there since 1989, I believe. So before New Belgium was there, they were brewing. Then we went to Twisted Pine, which was in Boulder. And then after that, my memory fades. but then on Thursday, before the festival started, we went and I met Rick and Jeff both at Redstone Meadery Had a great tour there and sampled some great meads. And James, I got to say thanks to your coverage of the GABF in previous years, because I would have never thought to go to the Redstone Meadery if it was not for your videos.
Oh, well, excellent.
So
I told them that Steve likes to drop some coin when he goes in there.
I need to thank Rick for inviting me to the Redstone Tour, because I've only had – actually, James, I've only had two meads, and one of them was the one that you sent me, you made.
Well, there you go.
So having, all these meads, they were great. The juniper one, the vanilla bean and cinnamon stick one they have for the holidays.
Oh, that was great.
That was tremendous. And then the Redstone Private Reserve that they have, man, that raspberry one was great.
Yeah, Steve and I both picked up a few bottles on the way out last time. There's something about sampling several samples of wonderful meads all in a row that makes you want to loosen your wallet.
yeah. And finishing off, from Redstone, we went to Rick and I went to Avery, and I gotta say, Avery is the funkiest brewery I have ever seen in my life. I've been to a lot of breweries. The way that it's situated with businesses in between their production facilities, I just could not imagine working in that scenario. Having an outdoor fermenter in Denver, Colorado, or just outside of Denver where it's freezing cold in the winter, I would not want to transfer any liquid. Touching that metal when it's freezing cold has just got to be miserable. So,
yeah, you can tell that they've grown. I don't know that they have a growth plan, but, they kind of acquire empty spaces in their little complex there as they open up.
I suspect they're going to get the place across the street, a little closet room, and just run hoses, over the street. Honestly, I've never seen anything like it.
But they sure make it work.
They do. Their bottling line was custom built so it would fit into their facility. And, there is not a waste of space there.
And they are proud of their beers. Let me tell you, Steve and I went by there when the tasting room was closed after we had been to Redstone Meadery, and a couple of guys were out there, kegging and raking out the mash, and even though they were closed, they treated us to a few samples anyway, and we will be forever grateful for that because it was the only time that we could be up there at that time, and they treated us nice.
I would have to say that out of all the breweries that I visited on Wednesday and Thursday morning before the fest, Avery had the most interesting stuff on tap for people visiting Denver. They had a dry hop salvation, which was dry hop with Styrian Golden hops. It was so over the top. I don't know if you've ever put a hop pellet in your mouth, but that is what the salvation tasted like. It was completely unbalanced, completely not award-winning, but it was... Hey, I've never tasted a beer that had hops like this before. So that was quite interesting.
Now, is there a home brewer that hasn't put a hop pellet in their mouth?
Probably hasn't, but how many home brewers have tasted a beer that tasted like that?
Yeah.
And then there was the Bad Karma, which was their normal Karma, but fermented with a wild yeast mixture, similar to, the wild strain you can get from Y yeast. But that thing was so wonderfully lactic and tart. I loved it, but I still haven't met a sour beer that I haven't liked. So
I'll hook you up with Michael Tonsmeyer. There's the kombucha beer that he'll send you. That it might be a little much for you. Rick Hagerbomber, all this stuff is in your backyard now. You live out there.
Yeah, now that I live here, it's pretty fun. But I still haven't had an opportunity to go out to Longmont and out to Fort Collins, so I'm still looking forward to doing that. One of the things that I did find out at the show was that Oscar Blues, they're moving out to Longmont next to Left Hand. I don't know if they're going to be next to Left Hand Brewing, but it's in the same ballpark. Apparently they're having problems growing to Lions. One of the things that Rick didn't mention about being at Avery was apparently there was a tour going through, and we just saw so many brewing dignitaries there, it wasn't even funny. You turn around, you know, and there's Rob Todd and Sam Calagione and just everyone, Greg Cook from Stone. They were all just out there being fans of the beer. You know, and we give them the respectable distance. But Thursday night, Rick already alluded to this one. There was the Hebrew and Stone 11th parties where they unveiled the Hebrew 11th anniversary ale. That was some wonderful stuff. They unveiled it at 11:11 p.m., and you should have seen the pourers at the Falling Rock. They were going crazy because they couldn't get the foam out quick enough, you know. it's just blowing foam everywhere. But it was nice. I got to buy Greg Cook one of his beers, in 11th anniversary beer. I don't know if he appreciated that or not, but at least it just whistle. And then Friday night we had a podcasters party. Most of the podcasters came except for a few. Let me see if I can remember who.
Let's see. You didn't invite me.
You weren't invited?
I didn't know.
Oh,
about
come
it.
On. All right. Well, anyway, there was at least six podcasts at the GABF, and most of us showed up. So that was kind of fun. We got to, you know, tease each other and, you know, talk shop, all that good stuff.
Well, knowing what you know, what would you do differently next year, Jeff?
Oh, I put a lot of work into scheduling my week, and there wasn't really anything that I was really sorry that I missed, except for Rick and Rick's private tour with all the rock stars of the brewing industry at Avery. I guess I was at Avery 2 hours too early. Come back to me at the end. I'll see if I can come up with anything.
Rick Sellers.
I wouldn't go to the festival with a plan. On Thursday, I seemed so because I had a list of things that I wanted to try, things that I've heard on Rick and Jeff's podcasts, beers that we don't find out west. And I had a list of brewers that I guess I'd kind of built up in my own mind or just thought I had to try them. And I found Thursday to be less enjoyable than Friday, when Friday I just went in and went from booth to booth, and if I'd never heard of it, I wanted to try it. And I found some great, surprisingly great beers just by accident, just by walking up and when there's no line, seeing what they had on tap. I would probably still want to see one or two, you know, beers or brewers next year, but beyond that, I would try not to don't go in thinking you have to try everything that you think you need to try.
Greg Hagerbaumer.
Certainly the before and after parties and the dinners that they offer, the tours they offer, take advantage of those, because that's your best opportunity to get out to the breweries and sample the beers and, you know, just experience their beers. One thing I discovered today, I was reading through the magazine that they hand out at the door. They actually list all the breweries and all the beers that they brought. It was like fantastic.
No, he didn't.
Racking my brain trying to figure out what the heck did I try, you know. And so next year I will look for that magazine. I will plot my tastings according to it. So,
yeah, and you see a lot of people with pens, you know, making notes on their magazines as they're going through. Because
it's a very simple way to take notes.
Yeah, yeah. If you sample, you know, as many beers as you want to try, by the end of it you'll be saying, now, what was that sour beer that I found, you know, off by itself in the, you know, and you, there's no way that you'll ever remember.
Can I plug a few of the breweries that I discovered and thought they were just fantastic?
Sure.
It's a fairly short list. Carolina Brewing Company, they have a pumpkin beer that everyone has to try. Bull and Bush Brewery here in Denver, their entire lineup was really good, except the Legend of the Liquid Brain was a fantastic beer. I just enjoyed the heck out of that, and they've got nothing but attitude. Humperdinck's in Dallas, Texas has a Smoking Mesquite Ale that's very good. North by Northwest in Austin, they have a Flemish Sour Ale and a Pomalambic that are very good. I already talked about Maui Brewing. O'Fallon's Whiskey Barrel Smoked Porter, fantastic beer. That's my plug list.
Yeah, it seems like the barrels are, everybody's rolling out the barrel nowadays. Did you guys find that again this year?
Yeah. I think in general, I mean, even in the brewery tours, you know, I think we had 3 bourbon barrel beers at breweries outside of the beer fest. And then, of course, in the beer fest, there was plenty of those to go around.
Yeah, I found that I mustn't really be a fan of barrel-aged beers. I found a bunch of oak-aged beers that were getting lots of acclaim that I didn't like. For example, there was 2 beers at New Glarus. There was their barrel-aged Bock and their Quad. I didn't care for either of those. The most outstanding barrel-aged beer that I had all week was when I was at Oscar Blues. They had a barrel-aged Gordon, and it was tremendous. Not only do I not like barrel-aged beers, I really don't like hoppy barrel-aged beers.
Mm.
But for some reason, their Gordon, the oak, complemented the hops so well, it just seemed like it was such a perfect harmony.
When we were at Avery, in and around the homebrewing conference, they had some oak-aged Salvation there that was wonderful. And it seems like they had, I know that they had cask conditioned Hog Heaven, but you know, it seems like that they had at least a couple examples of oak-aged beers, and those big ol' Avery beers to me were very nice.
Yeah, I tried the Oak Reverend, and again, it just the oak seemed out of place. I didn't really compliment the beer for me.
Maybe there should be some blending involved.
Perhaps.
Well, I love it enough that I brew it. I've got a Bourbon Oak Robust Porter, and I'm trying to carbonate right now, so I love that stuff.
Well, maybe we should trade samples.
Be happy to. Your beer is always wonderful, James.
Aw, shucks.
That's another thing I found, is that I'm really kind of proud of my home brew after experiencing all these other breweries, you know. It's like some of them were just plain awful, you know. And I was like, I could brew better than that, and these guys are at the GABF. So.
You know, as on to home brewing, the Pro-Am area where they're using homebrew recipes brewed by professional brewers, I spent a good part of Saturday morning there, and that was a great booth. I don't know how many beers there were, probably 20 or 22, maybe even more. But some of those homebrew recipes were just wonderful. They had a cherry stout there that I absolutely loved, a Belgian triple that was so easy to drink. It was quite impressive, and it made me realize, you know, once again, that home brewing can give you a very high quality of beer, even amongst the best brewers in the country.
Boulder Beer Company, they have a home brew on tap right now in the tap house, and it's got aniseed in it, and orange and lemon and lime pulp. It's just fantastic. I never would have thought of putting aniseed in a beer.
Hmm.
I had a beer that will go unnamed because it was in the middle of tasting on Saturday morning, but it was very strong in its flavor, and it kind of shocked me. I'd be like, holy cow, that's a different flavor you get out of a beer.
Well, I'm sure that we could go on for a long time, and we might after I hit the stop button. But I want to refer everybody to craftbeerradio.com and pacificbrewnews.com and bigfoamyhead.com for much more insight on the Great American Beer Festival. And I sure appreciate you guys. I appreciate your work. I'm a subscriber to each of you guys, and I appreciate your taking time out to talk to us. We who had to work our buns off here while you guys were drinking beer.
Well, I would say that if you go to Pacific Brewing News, check out our blog. I put together 7 pieces while I was in Denver, and most of my information is going to be in blog form this year.
Rick Hagerbaumer, what have you guys got planned?
Oh, I don't know, just some drunken rambling, no doubt. But I just want to thank you for setting the standards for what a podcast can be, and videocast also. I enjoy everything you guys put out, you and Steve.
Well, thank you, sir. And Jeff Baer, you and I have an appointment for perhaps next week to talk about the Sam Adams Long Shot competition.
I spend a lot of time this week recording stuff for the show. Crafty Radio is going to have 5.5 hours of Great American Beer Fest content that we're going to put up in a special section on our website.
Wow.
I should actually promote that we did get several good brewer interviews on a dinner we had on Wednesday night. So those will be good.
Well, excellent. I look forward to it. And thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Well, thanks again to Rick, Jeff, and Rick for for helping out with this week's show. Hope to meet up with him in person next year at the Great American Beer Festival. I got to eat supper with Rick Hagerbaumer, Big Foamy Head, at the National Homebrewers Conference. So that was fun. It's always good to see. I feel like I know these guys because I listen to their shows all the time, and I've talked to them through Skype and such, and corresponded back and forth. And it's kind of odd to think that I haven't met Jeff and Rick in person. I'll post links to Craft Beer Radio, Pacific Brew News Radio, and Big Foamy Head in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. And even if you've written before, you might want to remind me where you're from, because sometimes, I forget. I'm old. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop, where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step, from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process, from milling your grain to collecting your wort. And I just saw the label art this week for our upcoming DVD, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing. So keep your ears and eyes open for that. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it from us online. And we got shirts and hats, too. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. And by the way, I've been getting some emails recently from folks who say, where's the link? It doesn't show up. Apparently some browsers have a plugin that prevents some ads from popping up on sites. So there you go. I don't know. I might, put a text link or something to our Amazon thingy. Anyway, the featured products this week that were purchased through the sometimes invisible link are The Complete Guide to Single Malt Scotch, and D is for Deadbeat, the Kinsey Milhone Alphabet Mysteries. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site if you can see it. Next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we appreciate your support there. But that's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson, who also designed our logo. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.